Hey, this is Todd Smith from Dog Fashion Disco, Polka Dot Cadaver, El Creepo, and Knives Out, and you are listening to today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio.
Awesome. There we go.
I get by with a little help from my friends.
Thank you for tuning into this week's edition of today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.
What's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio, and I am sitting here with
Todd Smith.
How you doing, Todd?
I'm good, buddy. How you doing?
Good, man. Good. So
we're gonna pretend like we haven't been talking for like the past half hour.
Yeah. To kind of loosen up.
Hey, what
a
are you
bit.
Doing here?
Yeah. What? What brings you here? Right. I mean, you know, it's the funny seeing you in Cleveland, but yeah. No, not really.
My home away from home.
Exactly. It's like what's funny too that when I was in this reserve, when I was still in the reserves, I was in this reserve unit, Assault Craft Unit 2. And we had a Cleveland detachment, and we had a Baltimore detachment. Mm. And we had always, like, you know, there's always a rivalry and stuff like that. But that's not the case with us.
No, not by any means.
Yeah. We're like one big happy family.
It's kumbaya over here.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, geez, how many years have you guys been coming to Cleveland now?
I think that if I recall correctly, the first time we ever played was Dog Fashion Disco in about, I want to say, maybe 2000. So we're looking at about 20 years. And we played at the, what was it called? The Blind Lemon?
Yeah.
And I remember we had the bright idea that we were going to have a projector behind us. But instead of having like something where you put a VHS tape in, which is what we ended up getting, and it would play whatever it was on the tape, we had a reel-to-reel machine. And it lasted that show. Because the tape started falling all over the floor. And we were like, this is too much fucking trouble. Fuck this. So that was the one and only time we had a reel-to-reel projector. But yeah.
And it was here with us. That's awesome.
Yeah. I think we had Fritz the Cat playing behind us. Remember that? R. Crumb. It's like a dirty cartoon.
Yeah. I remember, I know there was, you guys have been here quite a few times and, Domain Cleveland even brought you guys in and we did some video that I gave you guys. I used to record some of the shows. I don't think that was one of them.
But, well, that was the Foundry.
Yeah, it's the Foundry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Blind Lemon, yeah.
Yeah, Blind Lemon, it was Hi-Fi and then.
Right. And know, then wasn't so the, many. Wasn't the singer of Warrant like working there for a little while?
Yeah, Janie Lane was in the kitchen.
Right.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. The history there.
Oh my God.
And then I think at one point too, Chuck Mosley worked there.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know,
both of them are gone.
Doug has. I know, man. It's a shame.
I know. It's weird, man. People are dropping like flies.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we'll be old flies.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I mean, you're active, man. You're a road warrior. I mean, you. There's no stop with you. I mean, we had Dog Fashion, and then it's like, okay, well, if Dog Fashion's going to take some time or whatever.
Yeah, we have four operational bands, and we just kind of cycle through them, you know. We're doing a 3-week national tour next June, but we just, like, we do what we want, and we don't do any more than that. And we don't do any less. We just kind of like, hey, what do you think about going out for 3 weeks? Okay, great. And then we won't play shows for another 5 months while we like record an album or something, you know? So it's like, it's looking back on what our goals were 20 years ago is so far from what we care about today. You know, it's like, it's nice to have the freedom to just do whatever the hell you want.
It's nice too to see, you know, I mean, I remember back with, you know, I've got a long friendship with Jay and, I remember years ago, like I was reading this book, The Success Principles by the guy that does the Chicken Soup for the Soul, Jack Canfield or whatever. and like writing, making a list of goals that you want to accomplish in life. And I lost that notebook and then just came upon it a couple of years, like last year or whatever. And I go through and I'm like, wow, I checked this off. I forgot that these are some of my goals. And then there's these other ones where like, man, where were my priorities back then? This is like, it's so far away from what I am to who I am today and
change,
stuff like
man.
That.
We grow, we change. Exactly. Yeah.
You realize what's
it's funny
more
how
important
those, keep it's us. Funny how those, you know, when you're a kid and like, you think about the old cliches that an older guy in maybe his middle ages, but you know, the get off my lawn, the
turn that
music down, God, music is shit these days. Back in my day, you know, I'm in the back of my day phase right now.
Oh no, I'm friggin', you know, being retired Navy veteran. I'm more like, you know, Clint Eastwood, you know, playing Gran Torino, man.
Oh yeah,
I feel like that some days. But man, I we were talking, man, last night was magical.
That was a lot
for
of fun.
Me. I remember that the show at Peabody's, everybody dressed up,
the white shirts, the ties,
you know,
Ryan was there.
Ryan being there,
another
one
gone.
We lost. Yeah. And, I mean, I remember that was like one of the funnest shows I'd been to in all these years of hitting shows and whatever. And so I was going through some of the old pictures, getting ready for last night, and then doing, you know, listening to the CD. And like we said, man, it's just like when I was back drinking, you know, it's like there's some bands I would go see and I'd be like, eh, they're all right. But then I'd be wondering why I was drinking so much. And now I listen to them 10 years sober and I'm like, oh my God, what was I thinking? This is garbage. But not with Altar Boys, man. Yeah. No way. I was just like, oh my God, like Famine Ghost, the beginning and the lead in. And just like, dude, this is fucking phenomenal. And the last night was just, it was like taking me back and I was doing it. And this, and because it's been so long since you guys played, this was my sober experience.
Okay.
And I
had
a blast. I had such a good time.
Yeah.
You guys, it was a party. It was a reunion of so many faces. And then when you guys, I mean, just to have Ryan's voice played in, it was just, man, it was touching.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Man. Well, I'm glad it, we were kind of, we never rehearsed. So when we got here and did a sound check, that's when we ran through the songs together. And that was it.
Yeah.
So it, you know, and then throwing in a couple Prince covers, you know, not knowing if that's going to be a train wreck or not. And then, it worked out. It was good playing with those guys again. I miss them. They're, you know, dear friends. And
you guys click so well. It's such a perfect match. And you guys are also professionals that it's like you can take the 10 years off and put on a great performance, you
know? Yeah, cool. I'm glad you feel that way.
I hope you don't before the night, you know. I hope you do it.
I mean, we were talking about like maybe every couple years just getting back together.
I would love to have another album. I'm sure many people would, but
Who knows, man? Never say never, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I forgot about the skits on the CD and everything, and it's just like, I mean, what was that like working with especially we talked about Ryan, what was it like working with him?
Well, to be quite honest with you, Jay was more integral in working with Ryan. I would travel to the studio from Baltimore and stay for a couple days and just knock out my vocals. Okay. But Ryan would come do the skits and all that shit. And Jason was responsible for all that aspect of it. So I was kind of far removed from that. But Ryan came in to do his vocal in the studio. It was the first time I met him, and he was great, man. He was just hanging out, having a good time. He's like, you know, we were like, how about the spoken word part? And he's like, cool, I'll give it a whirl. And the first take, he nailed it. And it was just hanging out, you know.
Yeah,
it was like,
man,
it was a lot of fun. And then we did a tour that ended very early in a disastrous way, but yeah, we had a lot of fun, so that's the most important thing.
Harbor Inn, which is another like Cleveland staple down in the flats, you know, that was like a home at Ryan always whenever he was in town visiting. I remember they had his poster up behind the bar, and you know, come to find out when me and Ryan would were talking during that time. His stepdad was like one of my supervisors when I worked at UPS and stuff. So it's me and him, like, you know,
small world.
Yeah. It was pretty funny how we connected there. But yeah, he was a great guy, man. And you know, much love and peace and to his family and everything.
Still is just, it's hard to wrap your mind around it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I remember when the news came out, I wanted it to be just some sick
hoax.
Prank. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember it was in the summer months, right? Didn't he pass away in June?
I believe so, yeah.
Something like that? Because I remember waking up and hearing my phone just going, it was on vibrate, but it was, I got to check into my flight tomorrow. But it was, my phone was going, that's, isn't that weird?
Yeah. Good timing. Yeah. That's timing. Lisa does say it's a little haunted up here, so I don't know.
Hey, man, we were just talking about Ryan and, like, my phone going off and shit. And all of a sudden,
he's here with us, man. I felt him last night, that's for sure.
But I remember my phone vibrating. So I'm like, who the fuck is texting me? It was Jason. And then all of a sudden, a ton of other people, Ryan's dead. He got in a car accident. I was like, oh, my God, man. It was. I still can't wrap my head around it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like we've all been dumb and done dumb shit.
Yeah.
And we survived. And he didn't, you know? And it was just...
And I mean, you know, he kind of made his name doing dumb shit, you know?
Yeah, and
With Jackass and everything.
When you... but if you look through that, like, the CKY stuff, they would always say that Ryan's a horrible driver.
Oh.
Yeah, and one... Bam's mom would say, one day he's going to get in a car accident because he was... a wild guy behind the wheel, and he got in a car accident with Bam and, like, I think Rab himself and a couple of those, and flipped the fucking car into oncoming traffic when they were like 17 years old.
Oh wow.
Yeah. He was a bit of a wild child, you know, so
yeah.
But yeah, he's very missed, man. Such a sweetheart. So
definitely. So what was it like, also, I mean, you and Jason have had a long relationship too, Pops, and
right.
What's it been like? I mean, when did you guys first connect, and like how long, you know?
We first connected, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No,
when we did a Mushroomhead Dogfest Disco tour with Wasp.
Oh yeah, that
in
was
2001,
like a Mitch setup or whatever back in the day.
Yeah, we did a national tour, and the tour ended abruptly because of 9/11.
Yeah.
We were in...
And that was like when they signed Universal, I think, too.
Yeah, we were in Ann Arbor, Michigan, when the Twin Towers had the planes driving into them. And that was it. Everybody, I mean, the whole fucking country shut down, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we just drove home.
But during that time, you and him just hit it off.
Yeah, it was
similar musical tastes.
Influences. Yeah, and we kept in touch, and then Mushroomhead was gracious enough to throw us a bunch of local shows, which helped us build something around here.
Yeah.
And then Jason and I were talking, hey, let's do a side project, and I got my buddies over here, the Martini Brothers, and boop boop boop, and next thing you know,
yeah,
it all came together.
Yeah. Wow. Very talented group. I mean, working with those guys, I mean, what was that like for you with, you know, because you, I mean, basically everybody else was kind of up here able to record, and then you'd come up and...
Yeah, we would all get together here, and it's weird, man, because it's a big blur as far as how we wrote that Altar Boys record, but it was, there was a lot of stuff that was kind of on the spot in the studio. People would come in with, hey, I got a handful of riffs. Let's throw them in a pot and, you know, make the puzzle come together.
It's kind of like what it sounds like too, because there's so many different like
styles
and influences, but it's fucking beautiful.
Yeah. I remember, we had, well, the Martini Brothers had, you know, pr- probably 60% of that album, like, pretty much sussed out with the more funk bass lines with the wah guitar.
Yeah.
And then I would come in with, like, a Famine Ghost and had the whole thing, like, here's a tune that I've been working on. Bass part goes like this.
Yeah.
And then show it to them, and we're off and running, so.
And then, I mean, the saxophone, it's...
Yeah, and then we had Matt does the sax on all the Dog Fashion Disco stuff. So I've known him since I was 6 years old.
Wow.
And he's a professional musician, you know, that's what he does. And is a phenomenal player. And so I brought him in. He started putting his two cents in on arrangements and parts. And our keyboard player, Jeff... Yeah. Was in Dog Fashion.
Yeah.
If he was having a rough go at a part, Matt's a pretty badass keyboard player too. So he'd be like, "Jeff, do you mind if I try something?" "Yeah, man, go ahead. We got to knock this out." And then, and he's over there killing it, you know. So it was just it all came together. Yeah, everybody kind of pulled their own weight.
Yeah. So speaking about your writing and your singing. Who's been some of your like influences, like when you first got into singing, and like how old were you when you knew you wanted to?
Oh God! Well, when we started in high school, I mean, we were all into, you know, that was when the grunge thing was happening. So yeah, it was all of the grunge bands. We were really big into, like, you know, obviously Faith No More and Bungle, huge Metallica head, Slayer. All of the Alice in Chains, you know, Soundgarden, Stone Temple Pilots, a huge influence on me. Scott Weiland's one of my favorite singers. So it was in Clutch. It was, if you listen to early DFD, which is horrible, like the stuff before we actually released songs on an album, we were trying to be Faith No More, the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, and Clutch all wrapped into one.
Yeah.
And then we kind of found our voice, but yeah, I mean, that was some of the influences back then, you know, a little bit of like Frank Zappa wackiness.
Yeah.
You know, kind of mixing a shitload of different styles into one song.
Like, I mean, even before you even started playing in a band and all that stuff, or was there, like, I mean, when you were a kid, you seen somebody on TV or something that you're like
the first time where I was actually like, what is this? Okay, this is music, this is larger than life, this is magic, was Kiss. Yep. When I was, you know, it's like most people's story when they're in their mid-40s.
Oh, yeah, the Kiss Alive album cover, I seen that as a kid and I was just like,
when I went through my mom's record collection, I see Dress to Kill, and the four members of Kiss are in suits, and they're on the corner in some New York City street corner.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy shit, what the fuck is going on here? And so you dive right in. And then after that, you know, I was a kid of the 80s, so I was a huge Motley Crue head. It was my first concert ever.
Okay.
First time I ever smelled marijuana. had no idea. Yeah. So that was my first concert, and then yeah, it was like, that was really one of the only hair metal bands that I was into. And yeah, then after that, it was, you know, straight to Megadeth, Slayer, Metallica, Anthrax, you know, the big four, and then Faith No More, and then going into the grunge stuff like we just talked about.
And you guys had like a relationship with what System of a Down back in the day too, right?
I wouldn't say a relationship. I mean, we played some shows with them.
Okay.
We had gone to a System show. It was one of their first big tours, and they were opening up for Incubus. And this is before both of those bands broke. And System of a Down had just come out with their first album, and they were touring in a really shitty, broken-down busted-up RV. So they were, like, they were slumming it, you know, but they were on a major label and they were kind of making their way, doing their first tour. And I remember seeing System of a Down for the first time, and it fucking blew my mind. I was like, this is what I'm all about. Like, yeah, I love what they're doing. It's heavy, it's quirky, it's aggressive. You know, it's like, it's exactly what I had pictured Dogfish Disco kind of being. That was the blueprint, you know?
Okay, yeah.
So they ended up becoming a big influence. But when we saw them in Georgetown in Washington, D.C., I just went up to the RV and knocked on the door, and Serge answered, and I introduced myself. We started talking, exchanged information, and then I hit him up for a guest spot on our first album, Anarchists of Good Taste, and he said, cool. And then they threw us like 6 or 7 shows, and that was the most people I've ever played in front of. So that's, it was awesome. A sea of people.
And just having the balls to go up and knock on the door.
And they were super good people, super down to earth. We ended up touring with them when Toxicity came out.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like when they were really gigantic.
Yeah.
Which they still are, but yeah. It was when they first hit.
Yeah, so. I just seen them. I mean, they played Sonic Temple down in Columbus, the music festival this past May. And still got it,
yeah.
Man. A lot more grays, but, you know, we all got those, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about Polka Dot Cadaver, and, you know, what was the where'd that come from and inspiration?
That was Dogfish Disco had broken up. We played our last show in Baltimore, and Jason and I, you know, we kind of went into the normal 9-to-5 life. Both had day jobs, but we still had these creative juices flowing. So said, hey, let's start something new and just put out some albums just to have fun and do it. Which is the first album, Purgatory Dance Party, is what we came up with. And we basically, besides the drums, played everything on the album. And it was supposed to be just something to do, you know? And then we ended up doing tours and putting out more albums. I think we have 4 albums now with that band. So, yeah, it just kind of grew legs.
I was talking with my buddy who I came to the show with last night. He's a huge fan, tries to hit all your shows when you guys are in town. We were listening to... I forget what we were listening to on the way. It might have been some Polka Dot, but I was just like, Todd's got this amazing, like, swooning voice that brings you in. Like, you could go, you know, get ready to do some loving with your girl and everything. But then you hear his lyrics and you're like, what the?
Yeah.
You know, you make debauchery sound so beautiful, you know?
Thank you.
So what's, like, some of the influence for your writing then?
I have no idea, man. I have sometimes people message me like, where do you get the lyrics? Like, where does that come from? Where do you find?
And watch a lot of like serial killer specials and stuff.
Well,
like that.
I mean, it's not all that. A lot of it is pretty, it's not very obvious what my thought is in a lyric. It's kind of just, bleh, here it is.
Yeah.
Make your own interpretation of it, you know? But yeah, man, it's weird. I was talking to somebody last night, and I said, they're like, how long do you think you're going to keep on going? I mean, we already had, I think we have over 20 albums that we put out. And I was like, dude, whenever I get, if I ever end up getting writer's block, it's over. And it hasn't happened yet.
No.
So it's, I guess, a sign to keep going, you know?
Would you say it's kind of like, you know, maybe like a adult ADD, but you've transformed it and used it for good or something?
It's just weird. Place. I don't have a lot of talent besides the music thing.
Oh, your voice is amazing.
Well, no, I appreciate that, but besides the music thing, I'm pretty average at best. Average sized dick, average golfer, average bowler, you know, like everything's pretty average, but for some reason I have the little voice inside of my head that says, hey, here's a lyric, put it in your phone and save it. We're gonna use this someday. And that shit happens several times a week, and I could show you my notes on my phone, and for whatever reason, like, there's just all these song ideas in there, you know? So it's, as long as there's a reservoir of stuff to tap, then we'll keep going. But if I ever hit writer's block and I'm struggling and I'm feeling like, you know, it's not happening organically, it's time to say, okay, we're done.
When it's forced.
Yeah, when it's forced. And, he wrote another song about a serial killer.
When, you know, all work and no play makes Todd a dull boy.
Exactly, you know, yeah.
Like, okay. before I get frozen in the maze, I better
yeah, but we're doing now that a lot of our records are turning, you know, 10 years or older, in a normal contract, you can basically re-record your album and put it out. So now you own the material again.
Oh, okay.
So that's what we're doing. So we're going, we did like the first three or four Dogfish Disco albums and we re-recorded them. So now we own everything under our record label umbrella. And it's kind of like, I call it getting custody of the kids.
Nice.
You know, so it's like, yeah, we can stream stuff.
Paying child support all these years and now.
Yeah, it's like, it's like they are our children. Yeah. You know, these songs are important to us.
They're of age and they can decide to come live with you.
Yeah, we should own them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So. No, that's awesome.
So we'll be doing a new DFD next year, and then I think we're going to put out a couple cover albums and just kind of do fun shit, you know?
Yeah, and me and Lisa were kind of having a discussion last night, and the power of journaling got brought up, and that's kind of like, you know, when the lyrics come to you, you know, write it down right away. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, I need to start getting into, you know, just to, cause sometimes you get these messages, and you know, it's like, man, put this down. I don't know when I'm going to get back to it, but...
Yeah, I've been adding to this one song, like, all of that, like, and I just keep adding on to it as shit to just pull from. Like, you're sitting there watching a movie and you hear a line and you go, that'd be pretty cool in a chorus. So I'm going to write that down, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just compile all that shit. And I've been doing that for 20 years, so it helps when it's time for me to actually put lyrics to a song.
They're like, oh, I got the backup here.
Yeah. I could just swipe through all that shit and it helps.
Nice. So I got a couple of, you know, my regular questions that I ask all my guests. Want to run through those. I know you got to get ready and go to sound check and stuff. Let me get through some of these. Some of the songs, what would you say are some of the songs that have inspired you the most in life?
Some of the songs from... other bands like growing up or oh Jesus Christ. When I first tried to do like kind of a solo acoustic kind of thing, El Creepo, the Beck album Sea Change. Have you heard that album?
No, I haven't heard
It's amazing. It's a breakup, broken heart country album that Beck put out.
Oh, and it's it
fucking blew my head off when I heard it. And then all of a sudden, like, Beck is one of those guys that I can listen to his album, and if I turn it down just enough where I could barely hear it, I start hearing different songs that aren't actually playing. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, I get it.
And then all of a sudden I have riffs. It's weird with him. I don't know what it is. And then I'll listen to his tunes and all of a sudden lyrics pop in my head. There's something going on with that guy.
Okay, so he's like a muse for you or something.
A muse, yeah. Because there's no rules, and I love that. He does whatever the fuck he wants. It is weird that he's a Scientologist, but I'll look past that, you know. So that album was huge for me. The first System of a Down album was big, too. The first couple Clutch albums were big.
Yeah.
It just kind of, you know, it gives you like a new twist on, we can kind of, they're doing that. We can kind of like do our own take on that. You know, it's like, you can have a heavy song, but sing about goofy shit. Or you can, if it's a heavy part, you don't have to Cookie Monster vocal your way through it. You know, just little things you pull from and kind of, you know, hone your craft, I guess.
So that's
some of them anyway.
Now, another question I got for you, like, is there a morning or a daily like ritual routine that you do that, you know, you want to start off your day, to just, you know, try and kick ass for the day, you know, is there anything you do regularly that,
black coffee? It's essential. You have the couple cups of black coffee, you hit the bathroom, everything gets worked through, you take the shower and you're off and running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a go-to for a lot of people.
If that doesn't happen, things are not going to go well. You know?
Exactly. Is there a favorite place that you've visited on your life on the road? You know, that You just, when you were there, you just like felt like, wow, you know, your energy and everything just felt
connected. I've always really liked playing in California.
Yeah.
I've always, once you get, I remember when we were first touring and you get to about halfway across the country and things start looking drastically different from what you're used to growing up on the East Coast.
Yes.
All of a sudden
like
there's
past Chicago or Illinois, it seems like.
What I noticed it the first time we ever got to Colorado. When you get to the Nebraska state line, Nebraska is nothing but cornfields and nothing. And you cross over into Colorado and you start getting a desert feel.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, okay. This is the West. This is like, and then you get into, I tell you, one of the coolest things that I experienced on tour was when we were driving in the middle of nowhere in Utah. And I woke up from a nap and we were going through these mountains that were like red, orange, like desert mountains. And I woke up and it almost felt like I was on another planet.
Yeah.
Because it was so, I was like, holy shit, I'm so glad I just woke up because it looked like we were on fucking Mars. And I had never seen, you know, anything like that. So
yeah,
that was really cool.
I got connected with this veterans group called Higher Ground, and they're in Sun Valley, Idaho, and they run a program where they bring out veterans with PTSD and trying you know, do recreational therapy and stuff with you. I mean, the group I was with, we went horseback riding up into the mountains, camped out, and we're fly fishing for the week. And I mean, there was a spring right next to our camp. We'd fill up our water bottle straight out of the mountain, and just my energy just felt beautiful, amazing. Mm-hmm. And out there, I connected with another vet who ran a hyperbaric oxygen therapy place, and he gave vets free treatments and put them up in his loft there. All they had to do was arrange their travel and food and all that. So the next summer, I took my kids and we drove cross country. I'm like, let's go on vacation, you know. So I got to go there for a month and do the treatments. But along the just the trip along the way, you know, the drive, seeing all the sights, like you said, right, man, and just, you know, I stopped and saw a friend in Utah, and then on our way home we stopped through saw Old Faithful and Yellowstone and then Mount Rushmore, and it's just a memory that I know my kids will never forget, I'll never forget. And it's just, it's beautiful out there, man. I definitely want to.
It's such an amazing thing if you have an opportunity to travel, because a lot of people, you know, I mean I bet a large portion of this country has never even left their state.
Yeah,
you know, people that just get, you know, they
and
graduate
their whole
high
life
school.
Ideas are formed in just that bubble.
Well, that's all they know,
you know, like the boy in the bubble.
Yeah, it's weird because I know people in my family who have never, like, they've lived in like two states and that's all they know.
Yeah.
Like they don't know of a Yellowstone, or they don't know of Mount Rushmore. They've never dipped their fucking feet in the Pacific Ocean on Venice Beach, you know, they've never gone up to, you know, I mean, Oregon's another state that I just, it's so beautiful up there.
Yeah.
And you know, you have a chance to do cool shit. We went to the Goonies house in Astoria, in Oregon.
Nice.
Yeah, and took a picture in front of that house, which is, it's exactly the same as it was in 1985 for that movie. Then we went out to the beach, and those gigantic rocks are on the beach, and it's just cool shit like that, man. I mean, you know, when you kind of say, what does success mean? Well, I mean, you know, selling a million albums and being a millionaire, yeah, that's a version of success. But like, if you have played shows, if you've had people come up to you and go, your music got me through a point where I almost wanted to kill myself.
Yeah.
And then you go out and play shows, even if they're tiny or if they're big or if it, there's 10 people or there's 4,000 or whatever, to have an opportunity to go out and see these places and connect with people and put out albums. I mean,
yeah.
What more can you ask for?
That's,
you know?
What's beautiful too is like, you know, you're at the level where you are connecting and you're influencing people and helping and changing lives, but you're not where you have to be a recluse because of people. Like, you know, like when you reach that almost that level where you can't leave your house without everybody needing a piece of your soul.
Yeah.
You know, so you're like at the perfect balance, you know?
It's great to have just freedom to do whatever the fuck you want. Yeah. You know? It's in my life, and I don't know if this pertains to other people, but in my life, I've always missed opportunities that I wasn't ready for.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
No, it makes complete sense, man. I mean, I've been on this spiritual kind of journey myself, and especially with sobriety when I got sober and everything. And what you're saying makes absolute complete sense, because there's so many things that if prayers would have been answered back in the day of things I wanted that I wasn't ready for, it would have been disaster.
Right.
You know?
So. Yeah, I sometimes think that like the only time that I booze out now is when I'm at shows. I go home and I'm, you know, three months or whatever, no booze or nothing. When I come out, because I'm more of a pretty introverted person, so I need to socially lubricate to just be able to deal. No, otherwise, otherwise I'd be running down the street trying to get some alone time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No.
It's the way I can deal with it. But I think that if I was in that goldfish bowl of success, that I could be dead or like hooked on something that.
Yeah, and I think that's why we lose so many of those people.
Yeah.
Because, like, what life is that?
You got to escape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And you have all this pressure, you know? You know, I can, and I'm only imagining what some bigger artists go through. Am I going to be seen as a failure on my next album? Is my voice going to last? Am I going to.
The judgment is so much stronger now with social media and everything, too. Everybody's an expert on your shit, you know?
Totally. And the world is so small now, you know? And it's like, you know, I try to walk that fine line of, you know, sometimes people message you and they think that I'm the same weirdo that writes the lyrics, but I'm not, you know? And so people send me weird shit and I'm like, I don't even know how to fucking react to this. Like, I'm not that guy. I don't sit around and watch snuff films. It's not me, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, so you're just trying to take that kind of that balance, but not offend anyone.
Yeah. Cause we know the world can be a very horrible frigging place, and it's not something we're like, you know, embracing and loving. So
yes, sometimes when I look back,
uncomfortable with you sending me that stuff, there's like boundaries, people, you know?
And sometimes people take the lyrics literally, you know, and it's never been that way for me. And sometimes I'll look back and I'll go, wow, if I took this literally, like I'm fucked up, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just like, it's like Stephen King writing a fucking wacky movie or something, you know, or book.
And it's like, I know with my time in the military, especially when I was mobilized and stuff, it's like we develop like this dark humor, and it's kind of like just to take our minds off of what we're really dealing with at the moment.
Right.
That sucks. And we just make it funny.
Right.
You know, and
you got to make light of it.
Yeah.
To be able to deal with it.
That's what you're. You're doing with your stuff, I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, I like to just write stuff that, you know, that people hear a line of lyrics and they like chuckle to themselves, or they're
exactly.
This is sick.
It's like, yeah, this is pretty sick.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying last night to my buddy. I'm like, he makes debauchery sound so beautiful, you know?
Putting the Chloroform Girl lyrics with that music, you know, and the way it's delivered is like, it's fun to have those two dark and light elements kind of commingle.
Like I'm a big fan of Richard Cheese and some of his stuff too, man, you know, because that just that, you know, it's like this, these songs don't go with that music, but it's just it
works
great.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So another question I got for you: what would you want your legacy to be when Todd's no longer here, you moved on to the next place?
I just hope that like there's a little cult following that keeps growing.
The mushroom cult?
Yeah, that it, you know, I don't know, maybe 50, 60 years that some kid 15 years old is going to go check out Dog Fashion Disco or discover it somehow, and then he's going to get his buddy to check it out and be like, wow, these guys are around in like the early 2000s and it's, you know, 2060 or whatever, and whatever the fuck is going on.
All of a sudden there's like Dog Fashion Disco shirts at Forever 21 or whatever for the new kids coming up.
Or just, you know, that like there's this kind of little, you know, this seed that grows into something and spreads, and you know, it's I would be pretty depressed to think that at one point, maybe 40 or 50 years down the road, that no one would listen to any of this music. You know, I hope it just kind of, I hope it becomes a little cockroach and just keeps going. Yeah. You know, it's like no matter the nuclear war, but it survives. You know,
somebody finds it in a time capsule.
And even if it's 100 people that still know about it, then cool, man. Hopefully they dig it and they get something out of it. You know, so I guess just, you know, we have the freedom to do it what we want and have fun with it. And I would just like to keep having fun with it and keep putting it out and keep playing fun shows, seeing old friends, and, you know, just living, man.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Let me get two more questions for you and then I'll wrap it up. Favorite toy as a child and why?
Oh, Jesus. Favorite toy was probably would you consider video games a toy?
Yeah, I guess.
Like Atari when that first came out?
Yeah. I mean, you played with it, right?
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Or like a Rubik's Cube. I remember being a kid and like the Rubik's Cube was like so much fun.
Yeah.
Although
yeah.
Now you look at it like, the fuck was I? I really had nothing going on back then. Or like, I remember my mom was pretty cool. She would always get me like the latest Star Wars, like the AT-AT. You remember the AT-AT?
Yeah.
I had the AT-AT. Yeah. I wish I still had the AT-AT.
Oh, yeah. How much money it'd be if it was in good condition.
I know, right?
Most of my Star Wars guys were like melted from lighters and stuff like that. I was like, what an idiot. What was I thinking?
Yeah. I had the Millennium Falcon and all that, stuff. Yeah, me too. So that was back when you could have just some stuff laid on the floor and spend hours in your own mind, like
that back when, you know, imagination still
before you were a jaded old
now it's
guy.
Like, you know, I that for me, and then now it's like I look at some my own teenage daughters and they're I'm bored. I'm like, man, I don't, you know, back then I could find shit to do in my head.
Oh my god, you know? Like the saxophone player Matt, I like I said, I've known him since we were probably 6 years old. We had a group of friends back in the day. We didn't even need toys. We had a gigantic, it was probably, 30, 40 acre park behind our house. And we would go out and play like war out in the fields. And we would all hide and try to find each other and shoot each other and all that stuff. And literally we'd be out there for 10, 11, 12 hours. And it would seem like 2 or 3, because time was just flying. You were not a care in the world. You're with your buds. You're doing fun shit, and you didn't need much. But it was like the best times. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And I like now being a like mid 40s jaded guy. I'm like, how can I fucking tap into that again? You know, like I felt a certain way back then.
Like go-karting and shit like that once in a while, just
doing whatever, you know, like riding bikes with your buddies, you know, like skateboarding or like doing absolutely nothing and having the greatest time doing it, you know.
Yep.
Just hanging out there. That was before like the cliques and the like when you were in that awkward teenage stage. It was before like people were so judgmental. It was before people were trying to out-cool each other. You were just hanging out with your friends, saying whatever you wanted, and everything was acceptable and fine, and you know.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, with social media now, it's like I see it with my daughters. It's like they're consumed by what everybody else is doing, and they think that everybody's living their best life, so they're only posting their best shit. I mean, it happens with me sometimes too. Like, you know, here I am, 46 years old. And if I get sucked into that trap, I'll be like, man, I'm really a shitty dad. I'm not as good as a dad as I think I am, because look at all the quality things my friends' kids are doing and this and, you know, and it's just like you get in that.
You can see why everyone's depressed.
Yeah.
Because they're like, why aren't I having as much fun as this person who posts, you know, oh, we're in Italy. Why aren't I in Italy?
You know, because of the life choices I made and, you know, this and that. That's why I'm not.
You start
there
beating yourself up.
Up again. And it's just like, dude, it's about these 24 hours.
Meanwhile, when those people get back from Italy, they might be on like suicide watch because their life is not as rosy as it appears on Facebook.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The best thing I ever did was get far away from Facebook. I mean, it's only a vehicle for reaching out to fans now.
Yeah, I mean, I originally got sucked into it when I was coming home from deployment, because I was still a MySpace guy back in the day, you know, and I was coming home from deployment, and a lot of the guys that I formed, you know, we formed a brotherhood out there, guys from all across the country, you know, and like, Bailey, you got to get on Facebook so we can keep in touch. And it was just like, okay, I'll do this just to keep in touch with, you know, my military
right.
brothers and sisters. And then it grew. And then they're like, oh, where'd you go to high school? Oh, you might know this person. You might know that. And I'm like, why did I fucking fall down the rabbit hole? Fuck yeah. you, Zuckerberg.
Yeah. It's easy to do.
And then speaking of military, I just added this trying with everybody that I talk to, because one of my goals with this podcast is I'm hoping that a lot of guys that are serving overseas and they need that distraction and they just want to, you know, put in their earphones and just tune out. I want to always have some kind of a message for them that they can get out of these episodes. So any message that you would like to send to our military members currently serving overseas?
Well, my message is I hope all of you guys come the fuck home, because these entanglements far away, it's a touchy subject, man. Because like, yeah. for me, I can't imagine being one of those guys out there, you know, the shit that you go through. You come home, PTSD, if you have all your limbs, if you're still alive, it's a situation that I don't know if we're making things better or worse. And it would just be nice to have those guys over there as a last resort and not the first course of action that we take.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I get it.
It's been going on for too fucking long, man.
Missed a lot of birthdays, families, you know, people that meant a lot to me passing away while I was over there, and I couldn't be home, you know, because it wasn't immediate family or anything like that. You know, my daughter, birthdays and stuff like that, you know, so it's like, I know. And it was like I said, that's why I wanted to kind of like start adding a little something, because I know what the distraction was. My dark humor was at its peak over mm-hmm. there, because I just wanted everybody else to laugh and yeah. forget about, you know,
yeah.
shit and have fun. But,
it's sickening the way we send our military into harm's way, and then when they come back, the way they're treated.
Yeah.
They should be treated with the same kind of care that the shitheads in Congress get. You know, unlimited health care, retirement, living high on the hog after one term, and then our troops come home and you have to have like Wounded Warrior Project to get these people care. Should be a given.
All these different veteran organizations, it's veterans that get together to take
the care federal of government should be know? Doing that.
Yeah,
all those guys that serve should get lifetime retirement. They put their fucking ass on the line, and then they come home and you got to have a private fund so they can get medical care. Get the fuck out of here. That's so insulting, you know. It's yep. disgraceful.
You're preaching to the choir here.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you know? And the amount of you know, foreign war vets who come back and are suicidal and lost in society, and it's awful. Yeah. It's really awful.
I mean, I know for me, you know, mine took an opposite role. A lot of guys, you know, I mean, I was a friggin', you know, crazy party guy before, you know, going over there. And then thankfully, you know, I got sober coming home. But, you know, I had to, I've been on this spiritual journey with my sobriety, and I've been like, okay, I'm not going to get the care I need for my mental health really at the VA. I mean, it's coming along slowly but surely, you know, there now. But I mean, I was seeking alternative things like hypnotherapy. I do the float tanks, you know, every now and then. It's like out of pocket stuff I got to pay for myself, but it's like, it's bringing me peace of mind.
Right. You know? But why should you have to foot the bill on care that a lot of this stuff probably started because of your service, right?
No, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why are you coming out of pocket for serving your country. The federal government. Wait, they can
throw a blank check at me. You know, they'll throw a ton of pills at me, but
there's a blank check. There's always enough money to wage a war, but the repercussions of people coming home who served, then all of a sudden this money is evaporated and there's no money to care for people.
Yeah.
You know, it's
guys are on the streets and
they're destroyed.
Lucky to have families, and the families don't get the training and education. Like, the families serve too, you know, in a way, you know, with the spouses over their single parent homes, you know, and that, but we could go
places
with that. Well, Todd, man, thanks for taking the time to talk with me. If anybody's wants to keep tabs on what you're doing and all your projects, where would you send them?
I would say we have a website, razortorest.com. I mean, we're not as good at updating that site as we probably should be.
They'll get to see the projects you have, and then they can follow each individual.
Yeah, or we have a band group page. There's about 6,000 people on there, and it's just basically where we run whatever we're doing up the flagpole, and people hopefully see it, or they don't see it, or the word gets out. You know,
what's that page?
It's a group page on Facebook. It's like Dogfest Disco, Polka Dot Cadaver, El Creepo, Knives Out.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's not very easy to maybe find, but.
Well, everybody's pretty much on Facebook.
Yeah, I mean,
they can
look me up.
Yeah.
It's all kind of tied together.
And then they can order, like, if you guys don't come through their town or whatever, they can order CDs and merchandise and whatever off the websites and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. We have anybody who's looking for whatever, if you post, we'll get back to you. You know, we respond to everything. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. And then I need one last favor from you.
Okay.
If you can cut a promo ID for the podcast.
Okay.
Just say, you know, introduce yourself and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio.
Today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio. Hey, this is Todd from Dogfest Disco, Knives Out, Polka Dot Cadaver, El Creepo. And you're listening to Boondoggle what is it?
Today's Boondoggle.
Can you splice this together?
Just do it over.
Okay. Hey, this is Todd from Dogfest Disco, El Creepo, Knives Out, Polka Dot Cadaver, and you're listening to Boondoggle Today at domaincleveland.com.
Domain Cleveland Radio.
Fuck! God damn it.
All right. I think I got it written down. You want it?
Please.
Help?
Please help me.
Yeah. I should have pulled this out in the first place. My bad. Where'd it go? There you go.
Thank God. All right, ready?
Yeah.
Hey, this is Todd Smith from Dogfest Disco, Polka Dot Cadaver, El Creepo, and Knives Out, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio.
Awesome. There we go.
I get by with a little help from my friends.
Awesome. Thanks again, right on, Todd. Man, no, it was great talking.
Glad it worked out. Yeah, you too.
Awesome, man.
Cool.
We're daily unfed. A slow drip, IV echo of everything that you've said. Now my Shangri-La is just a place where the dead rise up out of the graves to make a meal of my head. You won't be mine. You've got me thinking of you all of the time. In a burning bed, perfection lies. just a debt to be paid. You won't be mine. You got me thinking of you all of the time. You got me nervous and rehearsing my lines. In this switching hour, now the stars have aligned. In and out, you gurgle salivating on me.
Tuning into this week's edition of Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.